We were talking about senior consultants who are working on a contract for the Department of Health. The reported cost to the executive, £2,000 a day per consultant. The consultancy firm Ernst & Young has a £660,000 two-month contract with the department to help in drawing up population plans as part of the reform of health and social care. We promised we would bring the main man into the studio to explain this to you today. He's here. He's the Chief Exec of the Health and Social Care Board, John Compton. Morning to you, John.
Morning, Stephen.
£2,000 a day per consultant.
Well, I think you have to put the whole thing in context. We spend about £11 million every day in delivering health and social care in Northern Ireland, and we have let a contract for £661,000 to assist with the population plans. And as I've said to your listeners and yourself before, we are at the cusp of the most profound change in terms of health and social care. We know what we want to do, and this is now taking us to the high it's going to happen.
But if you know what you want to do,
yes,
and there are plenty of highly paid managers in the health service, because we've discussed that many times, what on earth are we paying all you lot for if when we come to a crucial time in Northern Ireland, we've got to bring in outsiders?
Well, I think there are two things I would say to that. The first thing is that people have day jobs, so you can take them out of the day job, and the consequences of taking them out of the day job to do this work in some circumstances would be quite difficult. For example, in the last number of months, much of our waiting times have dropped really very profoundly, 50-60% across that, and that's people are working very earnestly to do that. You take them out of that and you get the risk of those waiting times drifting back up again. Secondly, I think when you're trying to do this sort of change in Northern Ireland, we have to take a view which is wider than Northern Ireland itself. And so the senior people who are coming in do have a very extensive view in other situations where this type of change has been implemented. And that's important.
OK, let's go through those two points and step through them. Your first point, that your senior management team at the moment have day jobs.
Yes.
And therefore you can't distract them from that.
Not completely. You can't. Yeah. You can't actually. You can't stop doing the job that people do every day.
Can you imagine, John, how a nurse, listening to you saying that must be feeling, who has been put under so much pressure over recent years, because the system is stretched, and they've got a day job too,
yes,
and they are being asked to do dramatically more.
Yes.
We would both agree on that.
Yes.
And they're stretched, probably, and the context for them is that they're probably on a fifth of the salary that your senior team are on, if not significantly less.
Yes.
And your managers can't take on extra work.
Well, they do
take on. They're too stretched.
No, they do take on extra work, and they do do lots more than the normal 9-to-5 role. Very few people that I know working in management positions work in a 9-to-5 position. They contribute to the totality of health and social care. But I understand the point that you're making. And of course, the purpose of the reform is in fact to address those situations, because we know in the argument for change, for making the change, that the staff who work in the system have told us this can't work anymore in the way in which we are currently organised. We need to be in a different way. So it's about, in the end, it's about making things better for everyone.
Yeah,
for
but they're appealing, John. Sorry to interrupt, but they're appealing. The people, the frontline staff, are appealing for more resource.
Yes.
And they've done so for many, many months, if not years now.
Yes.
And they've said that they need a lot more nurses, they need a lot more doctors, they need a lot more help. And what comes back is, you understand that, but there is a limited amount of money.
Yes.
Then all of a sudden, when there's a management function, you don't find the money for extra nurses, but you can find £2,000 per day for extra consultants.
But the issue,
push that money
but
elsewhere.
The issue here is quite straightforward. I mean, we had to go through a business case. We had to go to the Department of Finance and Personnel. And certainly the expectation is that the resources will not be taken from the day-to-day running of the health and social care.
But it's extra money, John.
It is extra money, yes.
It could have been put elsewhere.
But it's one-off payment. It's not a recurrent payment that's here for ever and a day. It's here for a short and fixed period of time. And in the end, if we want to change how we spend money and change the model of health and social care, we have to do it in a coherent and sensible way, and that will cost money.
But if you and your senior team were experienced enough so that you also had the knowledge outside of Northern Ireland,
yes,
and you didn't need to bring in these extra consultants, we're talking about what? You know, £660,000 over 2 months, you could have employed 20 nurses for a year for that.
Yes, but we can't employ people in that way, because I'm frequently on this show and people are complaining about temporary staff being in temporary based contracts or being on locum type contracts where they're short term, they're in, they're out. The whole purpose of this is to get to a position where we avoid all of that. The whole purpose of this is to respond to what we were told when we talked to staff about the fact that you need to change how the service operates and runs. So to give you, I mean, a specific example of the sort of thing I'm talking about, I think I did quote here before as an example that we have 800 people come from nursing homes a year. Just as a small example, and who end their life within 48 hours of going into hospital. If you're trying to model how you change the service in that particular thing, and you think about what that means in a nursing home, what it means for the ambulance service, what it means for the receiving accident emergency, what it means for bed days, you have to be able to connect all of that together. We have to have proprietary tools that allow us to do that. These are the organisations that have these tools. That's what we're doing. You multiply that up over and over again. Look at an unplanned change on the other side. So we had the change made in our accident emergency services in Belfast, currently are subject to consultation soon. That didn't save money. That actually cost us £5 million more in the current situation. Now, consider the fact that maybe 10, 20, 30 more of those eventualities would occur. And we end up in a situation where we can't afford to do what we're doing and where the staff are in a very difficult position.
I don't think
this is about getting it right.
Given the stories that we've had on this radio programme that you're well aware of, you know, people lying on trolleys, people dying on trolleys, people who have cancer not getting the right care, and that's all been within just the last few months.
Yes.
There is no one questioning that change needs to happen. I think the question to you is about the lack of capacity within the Northern Ireland management structure to do it themselves. That's what people are asking today.
There are two things.
Let me ask you this about the... Sorry, carry on.
No, there's two points I would make. First of all, the management structure, in the widest sense, is doing it. They're being supported by Ernst & Young. We're not asking Ernst & Young to do this. We're asking for their support. We are doing it. So the leadership of all of this is inside health and social care and inside senior staff and trusts, senior staff who are in commissioning, senior professionals. That's where the leadership exists in doing this. We're asking for some additional support to enable us to produce a key point of reference, which is the population plan for the 30th of June. The difference in transforming your care to other documents that were written was that it talked not just about what it is we want, it said about how we should do it. It talked about changing £83 million out of our hospitals. And a key instrument in doing that is to get to the population plans for the 30th of June.
There will be particular individuals, these consultants. Will some of them be here for weeks?
They're here full time.
The consultants?
The people who are working for us in Ernst & Young, the vast majority of those people are actually here full-time for the duration.
For the 2 months?
Yes, for the duration.
So there are some individuals who are earning £10,000 a week?
No, I think, see...
Where's this £2,000 per day per consultant?
I think there was a lot of debate yesterday at the Health Committee about what did this mean specifically and individually about what an individual earns. I think the position here is we put out, through a proper procurement process, following all of the government regulations scrupulously, a tender, an organisation said, this is what we will do the job for you, and we're paying them that. I don't think it's helpful or sensible to say, well, that must mean, therefore, that somebody working for them is earning £2,000 a day. That's what the organisation asked us to do. That's the tender. And I don't think it's appropriate to go in to say, well, does that mean that person A is getting 2,000, person B is getting 1,500, whatever it is. The tender was 661,000. It was competitively won. The organisations who competed for it, and there were five major organisations competed for it, on the basis of their tender, demonstrated clearly they're doing this sort of business right across the UK. And whenever you look at any major change of the nature that we are proposing in Northern Ireland, nowhere that I'm aware of it does it without that sort of support and assistance.
So let me just scrutinise what you've just said. The people who listen to this programme, it's their money.
Correct.
It's not your money.
No.
It's their money. And you think it's inappropriate for them to know how much they are paying for a consultant.
But we could get into all...
It's none of their business.
No, I'm not saying that at all. What they have an absolute right to know is that... whenever I put this tender out, followed the government regulations scrupulously, that the business
case... That's not
a
dispute. But in terms of us focusing on the point, if I ask you today, right now, are there any consultants brought in from England who are earning £10,000 a week? So if they are here for the totality of their stay in Northern Ireland, say 8 weeks, they will have £80,000 for 8 weeks' work. And you think it's inappropriate if the public know if that is true or false?
No, but I think we're buying a total service. So every microscopic detail of the service, getting into individual salaries, I don't want to get at yourself about individual salaries. But
feel free to ask the question.
Yeah, but you'll understand the difficulty about all of that. And you'll understand an organisation tenders for a piece of work and it tenders for the fact that it's going to have 15 plus people there. We don't ask them what they pay the individuals per se across a period of a year. We want a product. We want the product, which is the assistance for the population plans. It probably does mean if you look at consultancy fees, and that was the example we gave yesterday, there are things called per diem rates. They're part of the government specification.
And can you give the public a sense of the per diem rate? What type of money are these consultants actually earning per day?
For the senior people, the company charges the individual out at a rate. I don't know whether they pay them that rate. The company charges individuals out, at some of them at £2,000 a day, some of them at £1,000 a day. That doesn't mean to say that that's the money they personally get. They work for an organisation. The organisation pays them what they pay them.
But John, if you don't know that split, if you don't know what the consultancy firm, in this case Ernst & Young, is taking as their margin, then you don't know if we are getting a good deal.
I do know we're getting a good deal because we put this out to procurement. We put this out through a formal tender process. We followed all of the public procurement regulations scrupulously.
And why can't you go? I know this is simplistic because I'm not involved in your world and you are, but I think these questions, you know, I might be asking simplistic questions, but they are probably indicative of what people at home are thinking. Why do you need to go through Ernst & Young rather than, again, making it cheaper for the taxpayer by employing these consultants directly?
Well, the issue there would be if we employed them directly, we would have to give them full-time contracts. They would be permanently on the payroll.
No, you wouldn't. You could give them a short-term contract. Well, they wouldn't. You'd give them a fixed-term contract.
But I don't think people would come and work for us in that way. They work for another organisation there. You know, individuals work for companies. They have careers. They build those careers. They're not going to come and work for 2 months for the Health and Social Care Board and at the end of 2 months not be in employment.
So these people are solely employed. These consultants are solely employed by Ernst & Young.
Yes.
And travel around the UK providing this consultancy work. So they don't.
Well, most of the a large number of the staff are Belfast based. Of Ernst & Young. Ernst & Young is an organisation which has a large Belfast base, so a large number of the staff are Belfast based.
These are consultants?
Yes. They will travel from Belfast to work in other parts of the UK, but it's again important.
And who are these people? Former doctors or what?
They have all sorts of backgrounds. They are not accountants, first of all, in the sense that sometimes I hear this is number crunchers and they're here to be hatchet men and women and give the difficult decisions. That's not what they're there to do. If you look at Dr. Richard Lewis, the chap who's in charge of it, a health economist, very well understood to be a leading health expert, worked for the Prime Minister in his office about how we're changing general practice and integrated care partnerships, central plank of what we want to do. Why would we not use expertise like that? Why would Northern Ireland not have the ambition to run a service which has at its heart the ability and the capacity to have reference points in that sort of situation? They have proprietary products to do the sorts of things I talked to you about in terms of referencing how you change one piece of information, what the impact of that is across workforce, across finance, across all of that modelling to help us. The truth of the matter is we could do all of this work. We can't do it until the 30th of June. That's the point. And the point really about not having it done for the 30th of June is that the risk is too great. And when you look at the example that I pointed out to you in terms of the A&E, where it's cost us £5 million, just consider I would be in this studio, I'm sure, discussing with you if we had another 4, 5, 6, 7 of those. And you would be saying to me, but you're wasting £40, £50 million because you haven't actually sorted this all out. Why haven't you sorted it out? This is about sorting it out.
Let's just get a sense of what some people have made of what you've said this morning. 0845 955 678. Here's Claire. Morning to you, Claire.
Morning, Stephen.
What do you think? You work for a health trust, Claire.
Yes, I work for the Belfast Trust. And basically, I think they don't actually consult
You still there, Claire?
Yes, I'm here.
Right, go ahead. Make your point for us.
Okay, I just don't think they don't consult the actual workers, the employees on the ground enough. I totally agree that the health service needs changed because it's complete shambles at the minute. But I just feel like for the last 5 years I've been working in the health service and have given so many ideas for improvements and changes to my managers, and they've basically just been ignored.
Well, I understand the point that Claire makes. I have no difficulty with the point that Claire makes. Transforming your care is the single biggest document that talks about change. It, I mean, just think what it says actually in the document. It says that we are going to move from our current hospital setup to 5 to 7 networks. It talks about the introduction of integrated care partnerships, providing care much more closely to home. It talks about, as we sometimes use the jargon, shifting left, preventing illness, giving people better information so they make better lifestyle choices. It says about no institutional care by 2015. These are not things that were dreamt up in some dark room. These are things that came from discussing with staff on the ground, people on the ground telling us that it could be different, can be different, and can be better. So if we have that template and that document that tells us about that, it's perfectly responsible, I think, properly correct to go through a process that allows us to turn it into a reality. Because if we don't, Claire and other colleagues will say to me all the way through, you never listen, you never listen. This is about listening.
But I think, but you're not really listening, because how can I have been here for 5 years and made so many, and, you know, none of my ideas are in that document, and I'm sure there's, you know, thousands of other the same. So how can you be listening to everybody if you're not, you know what I mean? If the managers just don't want to listen at all. And at the minute, I'm actually don't even have a manager. So I'm sitting and basically I'm up to my own devices.
Well, I can't answer the specific details.
Of course you can't. And I understand that, John. William and Coleraine. Morning, William.
Good morning.
Go ahead, William. John. Very quickly for us, William.
Right. Well, John mentioned a few times there about senior consultants working 9 to 5. No. Well, I'm sure nurses and other auxiliary staff work in shifts. Wouldn't they love to work 9 to 5?
Well, they don't work 9 to 5, do they?
Hold on.
William, but I think you picked the point up wrong. Do you want to clarify?
Said that.
No. The point I made was that senior managers do not work 9 to 5. I know no senior manager who works 9 to 5. Yeah. The contract that most senior managers have is to work the hour to do the job, and for most people that's a lot more than the contracted 37.5.
Let me just ask, and then we're done. In terms of the tendering process for this type of work, the tender prices that come in from the other competitor organisations who lost out on this occasion, are they all of a similar price range, and one just pips the other just about to the post?
Well, the tender selection has a range of reasons for selecting it. Price is very important. Previous experience is very important. Quality of personnel is important. Speed of being able to do it is important in the middle of that. But to answer the question, I think what you're asking me is, we had tender prices which were much more expensive than the one that was chosen, much more expensive. We chose this tender because the way in which the company responded to us met the specifications that they were asked to do and met it competently and well. And we have confidence that they will enable us to produce the population plan in June.